Do I like this defense to where, for the most part, they're going to know where we at and they're going to know how we play? Hell yeah. Like, this is the type of defense I want to be in. I want to just play on the other side of the line of scrimmage. When you playing a defense like this, when you got guys up front like JFM, you know, Jermaine, Solomon, like, you know, we can win a lot of football games up front. And that's going to be our motto. That's our motto in our defense line room. This team goes the way our front goes. So we got to live by it. We got to practice like it. We got to play like it. And that's how we're going to win football games.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Music City Audible, a Tennessee Titans podcast. I'm your host, Justin Graver, full-time NFL podcast producer for Odyssey. And joining me, as always, the managing editor of Titan Size, publisher of NFL Draft on SI, yes, the Yada Yada King, and my co-host, Justin Mello. Justin, I'll leave this up to you as we recap the Titans' second and final day of mandatory minicamp and the last day of the offseason program, the last time that we'll have actual football on the field to talk about until late July. I'll leave this up to you if you want to talk at all about the World Cup.
Yeah, disappointing result for Portugal today, obviously, but not the end of the world. First game, you know, of the group stage. They've watered this tournament down so much that it's probably not going to cost them at all. I imagine they'll still get through the group. Disappointed with the results, but not devastating. They got to be a lot better. They got what they deserved. They weren't very good or passionate. No energy, it felt like. Kind of just trying to lull the opponent to sleep, and then it caught them, and then they weren't able to recover from it. So it is what it is, but on to Uzbekistan in the next game.
Had some chances there in the last, like, 15, 20 minutes of that match, but couldn't break home. Had one really, really, one that I thought was going in, was just wide right. The Titans are back on the field for the final practice, as I said. We're going to talk about how Cam Ward looked. Another, I would call it a solid day for Cam Ward. Not an outstanding day, not a special day, but a solid day for Cam Ward in what was, according to Robert Saleh, more of a scrimmage-style practice. Pretty much all move-the-ball periods, all 11-on-11. Wasn't 7-on-7 today, so it was all, as Cam Ward would call it, real football, although it's never real football if the pads are not on, and of course this time of year the pads are not on. But solid day for Cam Ward. Definitely talk about that. Who his number one target was, not surprising, but, I mean, interesting. We'll definitely talk about that. And then a bunch of coaches, positional coaches, spoke after Robert Saleh. A bunch of players spoke after practice, including Jeffrey Simmons. And we'll talk about what's up with Jeff, what's up with his thoughts on this defense. You heard some of it at the top of the show there. We have a few sound clips that we're going to play. We're going to recap it all today. As usual, shout out to the Nashville Beat for writing up these observations, tweeting stuff out, giving us something to analyze. Justin, we're going to start with Cam Ward. Where else would we start, you know?
Yeah, I think naturally, right? By all accounts, another good day for Cam Ward at minicamp. That's two in a row. He was significantly better at minicamp than he was at OTAs. You like to see that progress, and then hopefully he's better at training camp than he was at minicamp, right? That's the way you want your young quarterback to trend, especially when he's working under a new coaching staff. Yes, Thompson, the stream did just start. You've missed about 3 minutes. Nothing to worry about. 18 of 26, I believe Jim Wyatt had him at today. Failed to get into the end zone. Sounds like the secondary tightened things up when they got into the red area, but led a couple four field goal drives, I think they said, led by Cam Ward, spreading the ball around, some high-level completions, high-level throws. Ultimately, can't complain about what Cam Ward showed all the reporters and the team at minicamp.
Yeah, again, it's not real football, even if it's as close to real football as they can simulate. And one of the things that stands out to me is the way that touchdowns are called in these kinds of practices, because you noted there, Cam Ward doesn't lead a touchdown drive. And this was meant to simulate basically one full game. They played two halves of football. Cam Ward led four of those drives. It's more like a preseason game than a real game because Mitch Trubisky and Will Levis are also playing, and you got the twos and the threes getting their own series, right? So it's not like Cam played 12 drives back-to-back and didn't lead a touchdown and only led four field goals. No, he led four drives. He led them to field goals on all four drives. And Jim Wyatt actually noted that one of his passes felt like a touchdown. Felt like Wandale Robinson scored. Wandale Robinson argued that he scored, and the ref said, nope, you're down. It's not a touchdown. So don't read too much into the whole, like, oh, he didn't throw any touchdowns. Is the offense going to put up 12 points a game? None of it really matters again. We're still, Justin?
I mean, listen, we're talking about practice.
We're still talking about practice, not a game, not a game. So, it's hard to, like, not read into some of these things, but he led 4 scoring drives. That's what I'm taking away from it. You mentioned the sacks. Now, according to Paul Kaharsky, the defense had what would have counted as 6 sacks in this practice, which is a nice number. You like to see that from this defense, especially with Jeffrey Simmons not participating in the team drills, which we'll get to in a bit. But 5 of those sacks, apparently, were taken by Cam Ward. Not my favorite thing to read as he heads into year 2, hoping to improve his pocket presence and not lead the league in sacks taken, or second most in the league, whatever he finished with last year, 55 sacks taken. Too many. So I don't like that he's taken 5, but you also have like Brendan Crenshaw-Dixon is playing right tackle and getting burned by Jacob Martin because J.C. Latham is still not practicing, dealing with minor things, according to Robert Saleh. A lot of guys dealing with minor things. Dan Moore gets beat on, like, the second play or something of the practice and gives up a would-be sack. So, look, it is what it is. You don't have the full starting offensive line out there. You don't even know who your full starting offensive line is. Again, it's just practice. Not going to read too much into it. Good, you know, positives and bad negatives to take away. Too many sacks. Maybe, like, you'd like to see a touchdown. Apparently there was one, but who knows with the way these are officiated. Generally, a solid day for the Titans quarterback.
Yeah, it sounds like the D-line was getting after him, and it didn't come off to me that a lot of it was Cam Ward's fault. I chuckled a little bit that I think they said the first play of team period, Jermaine Johnson beat Dan Moore for a sack. I'm like, oh, nice. You know, Dan Moore picking up right where he left off. And then Jacob Martin beat Crenshaw Dixon, as you mentioned, for a sack. And I want to say the very next play, Crenshaw Dixon jumped early and got flagged for a false start after giving up that sack to Jacob Martin. So going to not read too much into it, but we've got some concerns about the O-line. And it sounded today as they tried to simulate as much as they could of real football. Sounds like even without Jeffrey Simmons, as you noted, that D-line got after the O-line in a pretty major way.
Comment here from David Jenkins. Easton Freeze covered all 21 Ward passes on A to Z podcast yesterday. Puts it into perspective. I watched that last night. He also turned it into an article this morning, which I then read just to make sure I didn't miss anything in the version I watched last night. And it does put it into perspective, but it's also like, we're guilty of this as much as anybody in the world, Justin, of breaking down every individual play, like, too much. You know, like, again, this is practice. It's not real football. Like, yeah, we're going to analyze the heck out of everything that happens on every Sunday during the season. We have been breaking them all down play by play, and, you know, you get the numbers, and, like, Cam Ward was, what, 13 to 21 yesterday, something like that. And it's, like, 13 to 21, or was it 11 to 21, 12 to 21? It was, like, barely over 50%. And then you're, like, Cam Ward had a good day, but it was barely over 50% completion. Easton breaks down every throw, and you're, like, I understand why, you know, there was multiple drops, there was multiple throwaways. Similar thing today, Easton said he was going to do the same thing. I haven't seen it yet. It's 4:09 p.m. Central as we are live on this show right now. But, yeah, that does put it into context. Jonathan Clark, this is a red flag for me with the O-line. Look, there are plenty of reasons to be concerned about how the O-line is going to perform this season because, again, right guard, whoever ends up playing right guard is an unproven player. Even if it's Cordell Volson, who you could call proven because he was a 3-year starter, was not a very good 3-year starter. Jackson Slater, second-year player. Unless they sign a veteran like Kevin Zeitler and stick him out there, there's reasons to be concerned about the O-line. But it's padless practice. The offensive line can't get physical. You know how you block in football? Like, not you, Justin, but just in general? Like, the technique of blocking in football is to latch your hands onto the chest plate of the opposing player. When you're playing without pads, there's no chest plate to latch onto. So, if you can't be physical and for real, like, we don't know. The offensive line might be bad, they might be good. What they're doing right now in June with no pads doesn't have any impact. And again, J.C. Latham's not out there. That he's a, you know, hopefully a big piece of this offensive line. So to me, like, yes, there are red flags, if you want to call them, like, concerns or things to watch for, but not red flags as in, like, the offensive line is bad for sure and we're just going to have to accept it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm with you. And I think, you know, Robert Saleh has said time and time again, you know, you're not really assessing this without pads. And he sounded excited about the D-line versus O-line battles that are to come once the pads are officially on. So we'll see what happens there. But too early to assess. But, you know, something to stick a pin in it, if you will. And we'll wait. You know, certainly we're going to be following those O-line versus D-line battles very, very closely once training camp begins.
And the O-line's going to have a big test on a daily basis against this defensive front when everyone's out there and they're competing physically.
And sorry, quickly, but Robert Saleh has talked about the importance and how much he values joint practices. He mentioned that very early on after getting hired. And we've now got to confirm that they're going to practice with the 49ers before the first preseason game. And they're also going to practice against the Seahawks, I believe, before the second preseason game. I mean, two of the better, I mean, maybe not the 49ers right now, but certainly the Seahawks, one of the better D-lines in football. And when the 49ers are healthy, you know, Bosa's participating in that, Michael Williams, pretty good test on both counts.
Or if they trade for Max Crosby, which I saw a rumor today that the Niners really want to trade. I don't know how much stock to put in to put that into that. But yeah, and Robert Saleh, he kind of laid out what the first 2 weeks of training camp looked like, talking about how guys, he doesn't want guys to get behind. He wants guys to show up in shape because, you know, a week and a half after their, after training camp starts, they're doing a scrimmage at Nissan Stadium. 2 weeks into training camp, they're in San Francisco for those joint practices ahead of that preseason game. Basically saying, like, if you fall 2 weeks behind because of a soft tissue injury, by the time you're back on the field, we've blown way past where you would have been at because we're all the way in San Francisco now. I put this comment on screen. Inru has, this is a minor annoyance to me, Justin. It's fine. It is what it is. We all steal from everybody in this media sphere. I mean, we are literally using the observations written up and posted by all the media members at Titans minicamp and then talking about them. So it's like we're stealing in a way, if you will. But this has been floating around ever since we brought it up on this podcast, ever since I tweeted about it. The comment is, same thing happened to Caleb Williams and Drake May. Like, where'd you see that, Inru Hez? Where did you see that that same thing happened to Caleb Williams and Drake May? I'm the one who dug up the research, and it's been a topic on many other shows in this market. Whatever. I'm not salty about it. I just want credit. That's all. We got a super chat, Justin, and then I want to get back on track with the conversation here. Let's hit this super chat. Oh, my goodness gracious. The old classic. Oh my goodness gracious.
Kareem here, I guess, targeting it at me here. Where's your goat, yes. Justin? Where is he? Portugal will be better off if Ramo starts. You guys are awesome. Hope you're both well. Thanks for making all my car rides great. Not going to read this one with as much moxie as I read the normal ones because, Kareem, I'll strongly disagree. I will. I think only casuals, only casuals think that Ronaldo was to blame today. I mean, in 90 minutes, they created maybe two half chances for him. He's 41 years old. He's a striker. He's there to score goals. They gave him zero service the entire game. Ramos came in for the final 15 minutes and did absolutely nothing. And I promise you, if he had played 90 minutes, he would have done absolutely nothing too because they got him zero service. So,
if you swap Messi and Ronaldo, let's say Messi is suddenly on Portugal and Ronaldo suddenly on Argentina, does Ronaldo score three goals last night?
I think with the service that he had, wasn't Messi's one of them a breakaway? Like within the realm of possibility, I would like to see Ronaldo get some of those chances, right? Like they just didn't feed Ronaldo any chances today whatsoever. So, but thank you very much for the super chat, Kareem, but no thank you for the comment whatsoever.
Yes. Thank you, Roster Grids, for letting everyone know that I am not salty. And here you go, Sir Kendall Lieber. Compare that to how many opportunities Messi got. He's right. He's with you. I wanted to play a sound clip of Shea Tierney talking about Cam Ward because that's what we're talking about right now. Somehow we're talking about Ronaldo and Messi, but we're also talking about Cam Ward's performance at OTAs today. And just like, I don't think anybody is like worried about Cam Ward anymore because he had two good practices this week, but coming off last week, there was a lot of worry. Anyway, this might put you at ease if you're one of the people who are worried, or even if you're not. This is one of the things, Justin, that I'm most looking forward to seeing on Netflix's Quarterback Season 3, which premieres, I believe, July 14th. Super excited for that. Something to carry us through this dead period while we wait for training camp to start. But just Cam Ward's process as somebody who works really hard on film study, on understanding the offense, on solving problems. This is one of this is a quote from Tierney speaking today before practice, just about one of the first times he realized that Cam Ward was really that guy?
Really good. I'm really happy with just the way Cam overall approaches the game and the meetings and the whole process of being a quarterback. You know, I can go back to our first week of the veteran mini camp that we had. You know, it's like 5:45 in the morning. I'm just kind of getting ready for my day, and I get a call from him, and he's talking about an adjustment on a play that we actually talked about as a coaching staff the day before, and I hadn't even talked to him about it yet. And he was already thinking about making that adjustment with us, and that's in the first week we're really together. So just to have him there already, kind of in our first week together of thinking of those things, just showed me that we have a guy who's really committed to the game, is always thinking about it, and really just has that hunger to be great, which is what you want to start with your quarterback.
Of course, you want your quarterback to have that hunger to be great, but it's more than hunger. It's putting that hunger into action. It's identifying things and showing that you have a high football IQ. The coaches are noticing something they want to adjust. The quarterback has noticed it also on his own because he spends his own time in the film room studying things. He calls the coaches about adjustments that they're already planning to make because they're seeing things the same way in just their second week together. It's just another story about Cam Ward going the extra mile to be great, not just wanting to be great, but showing that he wants to be great with his actions. Loved that soundbite from Shea Tierney.
Of all the position coach quotes today and the interviews, I certainly thought that Shea Tierney's story about Cam Ward, that one that you played right there, was definitely the standout. And I'm going to sound like a broken record, but it's just kind of everything we continue to say about Cam Ward, right? He's football all the time, right? It's all football all the time. And that was really, really insightful from Shea Tierney. I enjoyed that quite a bit. And I'm excited about him, by the way, period. Like, I thought that was a great hire to be the quarterback's coach. Him coming over here with Brian Daboll is a big get. You know, could be a future coordinator if they lose Daboll at some point. And obviously, maybe he follows Daboll if that were to happen one day. But certainly intrigued by Shea Tierney. And I think he's a really good fit as the quarterback coach for Cam Ward.
Yeah, I totally agree. Kareem with another comment, not a super chat. Thank you for the super chat, by the way, but another comment. Cam stuff is ridiculously overblown. Sometimes I feel like we're just looking for stuff to write. Great finds last week, Justin. Full credit to you. Thank you. That's all I'm looking for. Appreciate it. All right, we have a lot more to talk about from this practice, including Cam Ward's number one target of the day and a lot of stuff. I want to talk about Jeffrey Simmons for a minute, so we're going to do that, plus some quick hitters, other things that happened at practice. But we got to take our first break, so we're going to do that, and then we'll be right back. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. We talk about mental health more openly now, but asking for help can still feel hard, and BetterHelp's latest research confirms it.
BetterHelp's 2026 State of Stigma report surveyed 2,000 Americans and revealed that 85% of Americans believe getting support is wise, yet 74% say society discourages people from actually doing so. What can we as a society do to close this gap between believing in mental health support and actually seeking it out?
Well, we can start by encouraging each other to seek support when we need it. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, you should know that BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform.
All you have to do to get started is fill out a short questionnaire, and BetterHelp takes care of matching you with a therapist. The best part? If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time from any of BetterHelp's tailored recommendations.
Don't let stigma stand in the way of support. Start therapy with BetterHelp. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's Better, H-E-L-P.com. Welcome back, audio audience. We roll on here talking about Cam Ward's number one target on the day, Justin. It was Wandale Robinson, who Jim Wyatt noted had 8 catches on the day in one practice, all 8 of them from Cam Ward, which means 8 catches in 4 drives, including one period where he had 3 straight catches. We saw a clip posted, I think I was on Instagram, of Cam Ward hitting Wandale on like a little in-breaking route, quick hitting in-breaking route for a touchdown in yesterday's practice. It seems like the Cam Ward-Wandale Robinson connection is really developing, and this is what a lot of beat writers have said who've been at all of these practices from where they were at early spring, working these option routes, understanding timing, Cam getting to know Wandale's body language when he's about to make a break, come out of his route. At only 5'8", by the way, Wandale Robinson, so like you got to be more precise with those throws to a small receiver like that. Can't fly it over their head. After today's practice, I think we can say that their chemistry is really coming along. Eight catches in four drives. I mean, if you're watching this on a Sunday, that's like mid-second quarter. Wandale Robinson already has eight catches. That'd be crazy. And that could be the way some games play out here if this is his usage in the offense.
He knows this offense really well. Obviously, he's spent literally his entire career playing in it, right? Brian Daboll, Shea Tierney, everyone that's here from New York, Carmen Brasillo. He's had 90 catches in back-to-back seasons. He's coming off his first 1,000-yard season. He did a better job this past year getting deep and actually winning down the field. I think a lot better than people realize when you revisit the tape, revisit the metrics. He showed a lot more this year as a versatile sort of deep field winner. But I still think his bread and butter, where he makes his money, is sort of short to intermediate, being that reliable, you know, QB-friendly target underneath the coverage. And again, that's what he's been in a Brian Daboll coach system for literally 4 years, ever since his rookie, you know, got drafted throughout the duration of his rookie contract. So I think they brought him here for that exact reason, to be reliable, to get Cam Ward. You want to talk completion percentage? Let's hit some of those easy completions. You want to talk accuracy? You know, Wandale Robinson makes you a more accurate quarterback because of his route running prowess in those sort of, again, short to intermediate areas of the field. So, big fan of Wandale. Glad they brought him here. Not surprised to hear that he's already being a high volume target for them at minicamp. And, you know, hopefully that carries over to training camp and certainly into the regular season.
Yeah, and he better be with how much money they paid him, but that's why they paid him that, is to come here and be a high-volume target. And you hear Elik Iemanjiss shouting out Wandale, or Chim Dike last week shouting him out, Carnell Tate shouting him out. Today it was Elik Iemanjiss talking about how Wandale's knowledge of this offense helps everybody because he knows everybody's job on every play. And if you're on the field with him, Carnell Tate said this last week, I think, or maybe it was yesterday. If you're on the field with Wandale and you blank on what you're supposed to do, you just look at him and he'll give you a little head nod and you know what you're supposed to do because he knows everybody's role. That's a huge leadership thing. It's something the Titans didn't really have a lot of last year, was leadership on offense, you know, especially from established veterans. As much as Calvin Ridley did a good job of taking the rookie receivers last year under his wing and showing them how to be a pro, Wandale can do a whole nother, take that to a whole nother level in terms of how to function in Brian Daboll's offense. Because even Ridley, in entering his second year of Callahan's offense, first of all, what is Callahan's offense? It was terrible. Secondly, it was still only a second year. Like, this is Wandale's fifth year in Daboll's offense. So I think that is an important thing. And it does make you wonder, like, well, where's Carnell Tate? You know, Carnell Tate was really loud start to OTAs, making a lot of noise with a lot of plays. He apparently had two catches today, two catches yesterday. He's been covered these last 2 days, not by Micah Robinson or back end of the depth chart cornerbacks, but by Alante Taylor and Cordell Flott, who both reportedly had pass breakups on Tate today. So these two guys, sticky coverage on Carnell Tate, really challenging him. Alante Taylor was, quote, all over Carnell Tate today. And that's one of the things we talked about on Monday's show, Justin, was we want to see these guys challenging Carnell Tate. We want to see Carnell Tate challenging them back and see a real back and forth. We did have a big play to Carnell Tate yesterday that we talked about, but today it was a quieter day. Those corners stepping up and showing why they are the starting corners and allowing Carnell Tate, you know, to ramp up his competition level. You start with Micah Robinson. Now you're moving up to Alante Taylor and Cordell Flott. Get ready for Derek Stingley, because at some point during the season, you got to face him twice, you know?
Yeah, I mean, we kind of speculated that once they got to minicamp, Carnell Tate would be facing stiffer competition, specifically from Alante Taylor, who this team signed to be the number one cornerback for $19 million a year, three-year contract, almost $70 million in total. So, or almost $60 million in total. I believe it was almost $60 million in total. Three-year, $58 million, if I recall correctly. Being paid handsomely, and Jim Wyatt's raved about him the 2 days at minicamp, hopefully as advertised, right? Kind of coming in, competing, pushing the number one receiver. We certainly need him to be able to do that on a weekly basis during the regular season. So I'm not going to sit here and say I'm disappointed that he's had some wins, some coverage wins against Carnell Tate. We need him to do the same thing you know, during the regular season against receivers of that caliber. And it's good for Carnell Tate. You can't just dominate Micah Robinson all summer long and think that's going to be your experience during the regular season, right? You're going to see corners that are of the caliber of Alante Taylor and better in the NFL throughout the course of an 18-game schedule. So like Taylor, love his ties to the city, the organization, the state in general. And, you know, good to hear. I think iron sharpens iron, and it's going to make Carnell Tate better.
Yeah, absolutely. And while we're talking about Taylor, he spoke after practice yesterday, and I wanted to bring this up because we didn't hit it yesterday. One of the things we talked about on Monday was Alante Taylor moving out of a slot-focused role back to a boundary corner role where he spent the early portion of his career in New Orleans. Was asked about that yesterday, and the way he talked about playing outside, he is excited to go back to outside. He said that that feels like he's back home, and not because he's back in Tennessee, but back home positionally on the field. They asked him, what's harder, slot corner or outside corner? And he said, I think slot corner is harder because you have to defend the whole field. When you're on the outside, you have the sideline. You have out of bounds. That you know, the receiver can only go one direction, really. So I thought that was interesting that he openly admitted that playing on the inside was harder, in his opinion. I think different corners will tell you different things. And also that he's excited to be back on the outside. So you and I were questioning, like, oh, can he make this transition back to being an outside corner? Sounds like, number one, I'm interpreting based on everything he said that he has been told by the coaching staff, and maybe one of the reasons even that he decided to sign in Tennessee, aside from having just bought his parents a new house in Murfreesboro, is that he was told, you're going to be an outside corner in our system. That's where we see you playing. That's where we need you to play. Because the number of times that he has said, like, I'm playing on the outside. I'm outside. I'm in the outside corner in these press conferences, whether it was back when they first introduced him to national media or yesterday. It's like something he keeps saying over and over again. I think that's interesting just because he has played so much nickel the last 2 years.
They don't pay nickel corners $19 million a year. They just don't, right? And on top of it, we know Marcus Harris is the nickel, right? They've said it time and time again this offseason, how excited they are about Marcus Harris playing that spot. I think Alante Taylor is the boundary corner through and through. There's no where it would get interesting is if, you know, if Marcus Harris were to get hurt, for example, what do they do then? Because you assume your top boundary corners – backup boundary corners. I mean, Joshua Williams isn't a nickel guy. Graver said he's going to fight me if I say Micah Robinson can play nickel. So I don't know what they would do if Marcus Harris were to get hurt. I guess that's the one caveat there. But certainly, you know, they've paid Alante Taylor to be the boundary corner, and that's what he's going to be in this defense.
Sir Kendall the Yapper says that he still loves that we signed him and followed that up with wanted him while we were watching the Saints game. I don't know if you remember this, Justin, but he was all over the field.
He was so good in that game last year.
I feel like he had like 11 tackles and 10 pass breakups, but
he was everywhere. Yeah, he was everywhere.
That's my brain inflating what he actually did, but yes, he was everywhere. We got a super chat, which is great because I was about to change topics. Talk about Jeffrey Simmons. We'll hit this first.
You've got to hit hit the thing.
Avalon Talks. Got promoted recently and wanted to kick a little bit back to the two best in the business. Thanks for all the work that you do. Hashtag hit the thing. I'm pretty sure I played the hit the thing version.
You did.
Of the
job. It was the best one. The hit the thing.
That was
Thank
my
you
goal.
So much, Avalon Talks, for the $5 super chat tip. Very generous of you. Congratulations on getting promoted. Second day in a row, we've had a super chat tip. Due to someone getting promoted. So we love it when the Audible Army gets promoted. We benefit. You guys benefit. Everyone wins. All kidding aside, congratulations on that. And thank you so much for choosing to share the wealth as part of your promotion. And really, really meaningful and thoughtful of you. And congratulations once again. I'm sure you deserve that promotion.
Yeah, congratulations and thank you so much. I mean, we're at 29 minutes, Justin. This Jeffrey Simmons convo isn't going to be a short one. Should we just take our last break now and then finish out the pod on the other side?
Hit the second break. We'll get to the Jeffrey Simmons topic right after.
Welcome back, audio audience. All right, I'm going to come back with this quote from Robert Saleh here, speaking before practice today, was talking about, I guess I'll set this up quickly by saying, Justin, remember last offseason when I was harping nonstop, almost, it felt like, about how the Titans' edge room was light, and because it was light, I expected Jeffrey Simmons to play a lot more snaps at edge. And that ended up sort of being the case. Jeffrey Simmons, they bumped him outside quite often to play a lot of edge last year. You might say it led to his best season, or you might say that him just finally staying healthy for a full year and really peaking in a bunch of different physical areas allowed him to have his best season. Regardless, Jeffrey Simmons isn't going to really be moving around so much anymore, at least if you care about what Robert Saleh said this morning about how Jeffrey's going to focus on one position because he's an interior rusher.
He's capable of doing a lot. What you guys are going to find with us is we try not to move guys that much. We want them to master their skill. Like he's Jeffrey's an interior rusher. He's probably the best one of the best, arguably the best one in football. And our job is to find ways to get him one-on-ones. And the more one-on-ones we can get him, the more we're going to win.
So that's what Saleh said. You have thoughts on that? We were texting during this press conference, yeah. And I was sending you stuff that I found interesting, and I kind of skipped right past this, and you texted me back, like, I thought what he said about Jeffrey Simmons was really interesting.
I thought it was very interesting in the sense that, and I don't have a super strong opinion about it, I'll be honest, but because last year when he, played like a little bit outside, you and I had speculated a little bit, like, oh, he might get some snaps on the edge, and then they did it a little bit. We were excited about that too, and there were some good results when he did that. So I'm not going to sit here and, you know, revisionist history, and I thought Denard Wilson was a decent defensive coordinator, and we didn't have a problem with that. The reason I said I don't have a strong opinion is I don't have a problem with this either. Like, I think he's very good on the interior. They've got a lot of edge rushers. I hope they don't have to move him out there, right? They're going to rely on Jermaine Johnson. They've talked about it. Where this quote is interesting, and I just realized this now, I didn't think of this earlier, is like, we've heard that they might use John Franklin Myers a little bit outside, but if you're not moving guys around a lot, what does that mean for him? Because he's an interior player. But anyway, if you do use JFM out there at all, you've got him, you've got Jermaine Johnson, you've got Femi Oladejo, you've got Jacob Martin, Jalen Harrell might make this roster. Like, you've got enough guys to rotate out there. Keldrick
First
Falk. Keldrick Falk. So I don't think they need to. I thought when the previous coaching staff used Jeffrey Simmons outside last year, I thought, and it was so rare, but when they did it, I felt they were just a bit of a lack of confidence in the actual edge rushers to give them the juice that they needed from that spot. I don't think they've got that concern under this unit because they've coached some of these guys before. Martin Johnson, they know the defense, they know what to expect of them. They like these guys. So I don't have I don't hate it. I don't love it. Like, I think it's a fine decision. I just thought it was really interesting, as Valentino just mentioned in the comment, like just the sort of the philosophical shift, if you will. The most important, look, Jeffrey Simmons is at his best on the interior. He's a defensive tackle. There's no debate over what his primary position is. If they can create all those one-on-one matchups that they've talked about, that he's talked about, that he's looking forward to, that's going to be the best case scenario for this defense. Have Jeffrey Simmons playing his primary position and getting more one-on-one opportunities from that alignment based on the way they're talking than he's ever gotten before, right? Because that's the goal of this attack style defensive line, this attack minded D line, is to kind of create these isolated opportunities for your best pass rushers.
Yeah, no, that is very true. And I'll also say, that maybe we're taking this at a little too much face value. Like, this to me doesn't mean that if Jeffrey Simmons sees a matchup he wants, that he can't, like, tap somebody on the shoulder and bump them inside. And Jeff directly responded to this Saleh quote because somebody asked him in the post-practice presser, hey, Coach Saleh said you're not going to be moving around. You're going to be focused on one position. What are your thoughts on that? And as I put this comment on the screen by Stevie, Big Jeff was looking like an edge rusher at the podium. Big Jeff looks incredible. This guy's shoulders and traps. I mean, he looks like a superhero. But here was Jeff talking about his take on Robert Saleh saying he wants guys to focus on one position.
Yeah, I don't think that's limiting me. I think when you can focus on one thing, I think what he's talking about is just, you know, because we talk about it with the team, we talk about it with our coaches. Find that one thing you could get better at and focus on. I think that's the biggest thing. But when you're talking about being on the football field, I mean, it's all, like, we had a play one time where Jake went inside, and, you know, he switched with a D-tackle. D-tackle went on the edge. So I don't think it's so much of, you know, he's saying, oh, I'm not going to be able to get on the edge. I think it's one of the things to where I don't need to be focused on the edge right now. It's, in his defense, you know, a lot of the things we're doing is going to be probably left and right. So what's my best rush out on the left side out of the three technique and the two, vice versa to the right side. So I know I'm an interior rusher. I know I play three technique, I play the shade. So, I mean, that's where my focus is for sure. But, and I'm not so focused on getting on the edge. I know my best ball is going to be, I'm an interior rusher or I'm an interior player. So that's my focus for sure.
I mean, first of all, he looks incredible. But he also mentioned that, like, you know, there'll be times where Jacob Martin wants to bump inside and I want to bump outside. Like, they'll still find their matchups on that defensive front. And Robert Sala said, the more one-on-ones we can get for Jeff, the better our defense is going to play, the more football games we're going to win. I think that's very true. There was another topic of conversation about Jeffrey Simmons that both Robert Sala and Big Jeff spoke about. Robert Sala talking about, once again, the snap count, basically. And he was asked, have you spoken with Jeffrey Simmons yet about, you know, limiting his snap count, you know, less than he was last year, a guy who is used to playing 80, 90% of snaps. Have you had that conversation yet? And Robert Sala was like, no, we haven't talked yet. But, you know, the goal is if there's 60 defensive snaps and Jeff's on the field for 40 of them, that those 40 snaps are passing plays. And we get Jeff out there rushing the passer on those plays. He went on to say Jeff's a great run defender too, and that he'll definitely obviously be playing the run as well. But that he needs Jeffrey Simmons to be fresh when it's third down, when they're in the 2 minute, when it's a, you know, crunch time situation. We need a big play from our best player. They need their best player to be full go and not out of breath and not gassed. Aaron Whitecotton talked about how he's the one responsible for making sure that those guys are rotating a lot. Really funny, slightly long response from Jeffrey Simmons about that, because then he was asked after practice, so we heard Robert Sala hasn't spoken to you yet about this snap count thing. What's your thoughts on it? Do you think you're going to have to talk about it? This clip, I cut together two different answers from the presser. It's a minute 37, so it's a little bit long, like I said, but really good answer from Big Jeff that I think gives you a little insight into, number one, his, you know, his attitude as a competitor, his desire to be great, and his leadership and team, like how much he cares about the team and how he really just wants to win. Because he spoke later in the presser about, they asked him, what are your personal goals for this season? He's like, I haven't thought that far ahead yet. My biggest goal is to win, because obviously over the last few seasons, the Titans haven't done a lot of that. Anyway, here's Jeff talking about the potential limitation on his snap count.
And, you know, my goal into coming to this season is just to make sure I'm in the best shape of my life. Because, you know, I know it was a lot of talks of, you know, if you can play more than four snaps in the defense, that means you're not playing the right way. But, you know, I try to each and every day I wake up is how can I separate myself from everyone else? How can I, you know, be the best version of myself? How can I be better than yesterday? And, you know, I kind of have that mindset that I'm not everyone else. I'm a different breed. And my mindset is I want to play more than four snaps in a row. Is it going to happen? Probably not, because that's the rotation that they follow through, that they follow. But in my mindset, when I come back for training camp, I want to be in the best shape of my life to be able to have that mindset. Nah, coach, I could go four more or whatever it may be. So, like I said, with the way I train, the way I try to get my body ready, I'll show him that, you know, maybe I could go six plays instead of the four that they're talking about. But like I said, that's my mindset, you know. But I'm not going to. I played four snaps and he subbed me out. I'm not going to be over there, you know, why in the hell are you taking me out or things in that nature, because that's a distraction. I think, like I said, maybe second-year player Jeff, maybe I would have been, like, pissed off. Like, but I think when you, like I said, in this style of defense, running out the stack, I mean, you see, like, I mean, every day, like, you see Solomon probably getting, like, 2,700 yards a day. That because he's running out the stack and things of that nature. So that's the standard. And so, I mean, whenever that time come, we'll see. But like I said, we got a long way for that.
I love his attitude. I think it's hilarious. He's like, come on, I can play more than four snaps in a row. I was an all-pro last year. I'm Jeffrey Simmons, for goodness sake. And the coaching staff's like, no, you're going to play four snaps, and you're going to take a breather, and then you can come play four more. We want you fresh for all those snaps. But I love that his goal, his mindset coming into training camp is to show the staff, I can play four more. Like, I don't need to come out after four snaps.
I mean, like, what else do you want to hear from Jeffrey Simmons, right? Like, the energy, the quote, the mindset, even, like, when Robert Sala talked about, it was a really important quote I believe you alluded to earlier, about how you've got to treat your body, with, you know, these next 40 days away from training camp, and how important it is to not be taking you know, just having fun, drinking, vacations, eating poorly, whatever. Like, what he wants is the attitude that Jeffrey Simmons just displayed at the podium. Like, Jeffrey Simmons literally said, How am I going to get better over these next 40 days? What am I going to do over this next month and a half to take care of myself, work on my skill set? I mean, he's just really, until Cam Ward takes that next step, Jeffrey Simmons is still the face of this franchise, in my opinion. He's the best player on the team. And the attitude, the like, he's just everything you want in that from that position, in that football player. And certainly they're going to sign him to a very handsome extension, I imagine, pretty soon. And he deserves every penny.
Yeah. And Justin, there's something I wanted to talk about with Jeffrey Simmons here. You and I were talking off air before we started. You asked me, like, you know, this is great and we're all excited about Big Jeff. But realistically, like, he had an incredible season last year. Is it even, like, realistic to expect that he could be better? I mean, what even is better than what he was? And I just want to talk about the fact that despite being a first-team All-Pro last year, a career high with 11 sacks last season, despite finally getting recognition from media across the NFL landscape as the best or one of the best defensive tackles in football, I still feel like Jeffrey Simmons is being disrespected. Let me show you what I'm talking about. So this is a tweet that went out May 21st, a couple weeks old now. It's a tweet from Sleeper NFL, who I don't know what who decided this. They call it Sleeper NFL's top 10 AFC South players. Jeffrey Simmons comes in at fourth. Now, look, I'm not going to sit here and argue that he's better than Will Anderson Jr. If you want to do that, like, I think there is an argument for it. I think most people will say that Will Anderson Jr. is better and maybe one of, if not the best, non-quarterback in football. I think the Athletic Football Show today had a pod where they did a draft of the best non-quarterbacks in football, and Will Anderson Jr. was the first pick, I want to say. So look, Will Anderson Jr., top of the list, no problem with that. Like, my bias would put Simmons ahead, but no problem with that. However, I cannot get behind Jonathan Taylor and Quentin Nelson as number two and number three on this list. In fact, I don't think they're top five players in the AFC South. I think Jeffrey Simmons is unquestionably the number two player in the AFC South with an argument for number one. And then I would put more Texans on this list before I put Taylor or Nelson. Quentin Nelson was the best guard in football for many years. But the last season and a half and two and to three, I mean, he hasn't necessarily been the same guy, right? And Jonathan Taylor, I mean, give me a break. Jonathan Taylor is a one-dimensional running back. Is he a really good one-dimensional running back? Of course he is. Is he one of the top six running backs in football? Of course he is. Is he the second best player in the AFC South? No, not in a million years. Yeah, give me a break with that.
I think we're pretty aligned on this list. I'm sorry, but I think I would go Anderson and Simmons like 1-2 in some order. I get the argument. I think I'd put Derek Stingley number three, yeah, to be honest with you. And I might even put Danielle Hunter number four, like ahead of both Taylor and Nelson and Sauce if he can get back, you know, and I'd probably put Sauce and Nico Collins ahead of both Taylor and Nelson too, to be honest with you. But I mean, neither here nor there. Who really cares about this?
Yeah, I agree. I also say that Josh Hines-Allen has an argument for top 10 player in the division. But anyway, more disrespect? Sure, let's talk about more disrespect, Justin. This is very small, so let me blow it up. These are the Defensive Player of the Year odds, according to DraftKings right now. You do not want to know how far I have to scroll to get to Jeffrey Simmons' name, okay? Top of the list, Myles Garrett, 4.5-1. That makes sense. Myles Garrett coming off a record-setting season, goes to the Rams, which is, you know, potentially a better pass rushing situation. His team will actually have a lead in the fourth quarter, which they very rarely had in Cleveland. So he's going to get a lot of chances to rush the passer. Obviously, Myles Garrett should be the favorite. But, like, to tell me that Jeffrey Simmons is behind Quinyon Mitchell, I mean, Quinyon Mitchell's a good corner, but give me a break. To have him behind Montez Sweat, I mean, we're not even close to Jeffrey Simmons yet. To have him behind Cooper DeJean, to have him behind Laiatu Latu is 60-1. Where's Jeffrey Simmons? Don't see him yet. He's behind Will McDonald and he's behind Abdul Carter. He's behind George Karloftis and Devin Lloyd and Byron Young and Bradley Chubb and Andrew Van Ginkle and Tuli Tuipulotu and Roquan Smith and Rashawn Gary. And he's all the way down at 100-1. You're telling me Tuli Tuipulotu has a better chance to win Defensive Player of the Year than Jeffrey Simmons? When I talk about somebody being disrespected, this is the definition of it. Look, Jeffrey Simmons would have to have an incredible year. We were talking back to our pre-show conversation, Justin, you said, how much better can Jeffrey Simmons even realistically get? And I said, well, Aaron Donald had a 20-sack season. And it's like, okay, Aaron Donald's a different breed of player. We don't need to compare Aaron Donald, one of the best of all time, if not the best interior defender of all time, to Jeffrey Simmons. But Aaron Donald won Defensive Player of the Year with a 13.5 sack season. And you said to me, well, you know, Aaron Donald's a name. Aaron Donald can win Defensive Player of the Year with 13.5 sacks. Jeffrey Simmons probably needs more than that to get in the conversation. Fair. But let's say Jeffrey Simmons gets more pass rushing opportunities because the Titans actually have leads of their own at some point this season. He's fresher on pass rushing downs. He gets more one-on-one matchups because of Robert Saleh's defense and the attack front and the fact that John Franklin Myers is there and Jermaine Johnson's there and Jacob Martin's there, and they have a stacked group now where that he was like the guy by himself last year in terms of pass rushing juice. Could he get to 14, 15 sacks? I mean, let's not say that that's easy. Obviously, that would be an incredible season for him. But if he does that, if the Titans' defense is even remotely good, you know, if they take a step forward, it's not like the Browns were a good team last year, but their defense was good, right? Myles Garrett sets a record, wins Defensive Player of the Year. If Jeffrey Simmons has the best interior pass rushing season of anybody in the league, which is very possible, he's been up there every year of his career. If the Titans win 6 or 7 games and it's their defense leading the way, you're telling me Jeffrey Simmons is 100-1 to win Defensive Player of the Year? Now, I'm not telling anybody to go spend their money on this, you know? It's a long shot for a reason. The media market that he plays in definitely matters, but 100-1 is crazy to me. Like, you're telling me there he has a 1% chance to win Defensive Player of the Year? That is one of the most ridiculous, disrespecting things I've ever heard of. And Justin, we haven't even talked about the very revealing information we got today about how the fact that Jeffrey Simmons has played the last 2.5 years with an inability to fully extend his right arm because he had an elbow issue that he got cleaned up in February. He said he's fully healed from that. They talked about how he's working through a few things. I think he's working back to football shape. And like the reason he's not in the team drills right now is because he's been in Dallas for a while and he needs to like get back into the swing of it. And he'll be back on the field ready to roll in training camp. Anyway, 100-1 odds. I think this is absolutely ludicrous. And again, just ultimately disrespectful to the best player on the Titans.
Yeah, it kind of tough to comprehend the odds. But listen, small market, a team that's won 3 games in back-to-back seasons, like Defensive Player of the Year, you probably got to win some games, right? So the Titans have to be a lot better for him to even garner a consideration. And in all honesty, these are silly things, but these things get help decide it. He also doesn't have a primetime game. You know, I think a national audience is pretty well aware of how good Jeffrey Simmons is, but maybe not, you know, he doesn't have the reputation that a J.J. Watt or an Aaron Donald, you know, markets. I mean, Watt played in Houston, but they were good for a while, and Donald in L.A. certainly helps. But big fan of Jeffrey Simmons, nothing bad to say. I think he's due for another massive, massive season.
Sir Kendall the Yapper, so we should put 50 cents on Jeff? Look, I'm not telling you how to bet or that you should bet. If you do decide to bet, do it responsibly. Never gamble more than you can afford to lose. I will just say, if you put 50 cents on Jeff to win Defensive Player of the Year, that pays you $50. A 50-cent bet to pay $50 on the best player on the defense, winning an award that is not crazy to imagine him potentially being on that ascending arc to potentially being in the conversation for. 50 cents to pay $50. You bet $10 on that, it pays $1,000. Just saying. I will be doing that when I go to Vegas later this summer. But I'm not telling anybody else how to spend their money. I would never advise anybody to gamble anything. But that's my spiel on Big Jeff, and I think that he has a way better than 1% chance to win Defensive Player of the Year. Justin, we had a few more quick hitters from camp. Did you want to mention? Is that all on Jeffrey Simmons? And we're moving on.
Yeah, I think we could probably move on from Jeffrey Simmons.
All right, Xavier Restrepo. Now, Justin, I really, really hoped that the Titans would have tweeted this out by now. apparently, they still have not tweeted this out. I've been paying attention to the timeline here, looking for some media. Maybe it's on Instagram. Xavier Restrepo reportedly had the catch of the offseason today. We have hardly, if at all, even mentioned Xavier Restrepo on this show over the last 2 months. Xavier Restrepo led all Titans in spring practices in catches. Xavier Restrepo had what was called an Odell Beckham-like catch. He did the Odell Beckham reaching back fingertips catch at the goal line in today's practice for what everyone called the highlight of the spring, the best play of the spring. Now, we talked about how Robert Saleh, did we talk about this or was this off air? Robert Saleh talked about how the wide receiver room, the back end of the wide receiver is very, very competitive, that it's going to be a bloodbath fighting for those last receiver spots. And we can assume, I think, that there are five guys who are locks to make the roster right now, being Carnell Tate, Wandale Robinson, Calvin Ridley, Elik Ayamanu, Shimmer Adike. We've all penciled in Bryce Oliver for the sixth spot because of his special teams capabilities. Easton Freeze wrote today that KJ Osborne is going to be a guy we're talking about during preseason because he's been making plays in camp as well. But nobody has made more plays, if we're just counting pure catch tally, than Xavier Restrepo, who scored a touchdown yesterday with a 15 to 20 yards after catch move that he put on in the open field. And today, making the highlight of the entire offseason, are we not talking enough about Xavier Restrepo? Or is this classic, we're in shorts, some guys shine in shorts. When we get to training camp and preseason, we'll see why Restrepo's buried on the depth chart? Because this time last year, we were head over heels excited about what Xavier Restrepo could bring to the Titans receiving room.
I trust Robert Saleh when he says there's going to be competition at wide receiver, right? Like, we're all penciling in Bryce Oliver for that sixth receiver spot, but I do think we should do it in pencil and not pen, right? Like, it's not like he's an established NFLer. He spent most of last year hurt. We know what he brings to the table on special teams is probably his best value and gives him the best chance at the number six spot, but I didn't know that you were going to mention KJ Osborne, because I was going to if you didn't, because he's played in the NFL a long time. He's had some good seasons under his belt. I've seen his name surface a lot, you know, throughout OTA. So, and honestly, like, given his experience and the production that he's had, can you imagine when he gets on the field in the preseason and he's playing against, you know, seven strength corners? Like, he probably is going to tear up the preseason, KJ Osborne. And I have a feeling that Restrepo will too. So he was consistently productive as well, Restrepo, at OTAs and minicamp. Everyone very complimentary of him. So hope he can carry this over. And I do think that, you know, he's certainly in the mix. I'm going to continue believing that Bryce Oliver maybe has the inside track. But I definitely think KJ Osborne and Xavier Restrepo are in that conversation. And Hank Beatty, by the way, the other, like, the UDFA receiver, has apparently had a really nice summer too. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, totally. X says Wandale Robinson's understudy. I think, like, his ultimate home is on the practice squad as a guy that you call up if you need to because of injuries, and you feel good about the fact that he's your depth, like practice squad level depth. I don't think you need to worry about him being stolen away by another team. That happens way less often than any fan base ever wants to think it does. So I think that's probably where he ends up. But if he keeps making plays like this, yeah, here, Roster Grid said exactly what I was trying to say. I think realistically, Restrepo and Hank Beatty are competing for the, quote, first slot guy to be elevated, end quote, spot on the practice squad. I think Osborne is being overhyped, in my opinion. Hasn't done anything in 3 years. Well, he's been out of the league. We don't know if that was personal decision, if nobody wanted him. If it was,
well, no, he was on like not totally, because he was on the Commanders practice squad, I think, for a few weeks last year, and he had latched on with the Patriots for a little bit before that. So it's been a really strange trajectory for him, because he was like really productive. Like, I mean, really productive. He had like a couple of years with 500 yards and then completely disappeared.
1,800 yards in three seasons in Minnesota.
Yeah.
That's not nothing.
Completely disappeared. Like, I think he signed a one-year deal with New England, and they cut him after a few weeks and then could only latch on with the Commanders practice squad. And we never heard of like an injury or anything that led to the fall off. So really weird kind of to wrap your head around. But he's a guy, it's not like he's old either. Like, he's not that old. So he's a guy that did produce a bunch of 500-yard seasons in this league consecutively. Curious, yeah, he was worth evaluating, you know, during this period. I'll say that.
Right. I will just confirm now that the Titans, as of this live taping, have not posted the catch yet. If they don't post it before the end of this show, I will find it, and we'll, assuming they post it eventually, we will play it on tomorrow's show because we have to. It's the play of the offseason. Real quickly, quick hitters on today's practice. There was a few guys not practicing still, including J.C. Latham, Femi Oladejo, Tony Adams, and Imani Hooker. Now, Robert Saleh told us that Latham and Oladejo have little things they're working through. Femi's been banged up all offseason. It didn't sound like it was the same injury that knocked him out for the year last year. So it sounds like he picked up some soft tissue something during this offseason training period. Hopefully he's ready for training camp. Hopefully he's ready to like train over the next 48 days, however many days it is, until July 28th. July 28th, by the way, Jeffrey Simmons said that he'll be here in training camp on July 28th. That's the first time we've gotten that date from anybody. And the Titans tweeted that clip out with July 28th in the caption. So I think that might be a reporting day. That might be first practice day. We'll get that eventually, but good to know. July 28th looks like when Titans training camp begins. But anyway, like you mentioned the Robert Saleh talking about how important it is to take care of your body. I originally had this as the intro clip for the show, Justin, until post-practice, and then Jeffrey Simmons spoke, and I was like, oh, that's better. I'm going to use that. I did transcribe the quote, and I'm going to read it to you guys right now because I think it's very interesting. Robert Saleh said, I'll talk to the players more about it tomorrow, but these next 40 days are critical. I feel like so many players lose their season before it even starts because of the way they handle these next 40 days. It's not a vacation. They've got to get ready to play ball. We kind of trick it by pretending the 4-day acclimation period will help give them a runway to kind of get into the season. There is no runway. When you get here, we got to go. And if you're not prepared to play, you're going to get hurt. And that's league-wide. And we could put bubble wrap on these guys and delay the inevitable, which leads to injury weeks 1 through 5 during the season. But the important thing is our players attack the heck out of the next 40 days, get here ready to play, and have an amazing training camp. I read all that to say, I hope J.C. Latham and Femi Oladejo can attack the next 40 days to get ready for training camp. Because the last thing you want is these nagging injuries from the spring to affect their training camp. We talked about already Robert Saleh saying, you know, you missed those first 2 weeks. We're in San Francisco. So that 4-day acclimation period, he said, there's not enough time. That's not an actual enough time. You need to be acclimating for the next 40 days so that the 4-day acclimation period, and I mentioned this yesterday too about Cam Ward wanting to work with the receivers and everything. Cam said it himself yesterday that when we show up day one of training camp, we want to be where we were at the end of spring. We don't want to be taking steps backward to have to catch up again to where we were. So it's super important. It's nothing to panic about right now. We don't know the extent of these guys' injuries, but it definitely has me slightly concerned when you're talking about a second-year second-round pick, a third-year first-round pick, guys that you need to be contributors on this team. And J.C. Latham, more than you need J.C. Latham to be good, or this offense has a major hole. And so it's just like slight eyebrow raise right now because, again, it's still June, but something I'll be tracking closely.
Certainly. You know, those guys, Femi Oladejo, J.C. Latham, anyone that's been nursing an injury throughout these periods have to show up to camp healthy. Both of those guys are important. So hopefully they're ready to go. I think that might do it for today's episode of the Music City Audible podcast, special live edition, 60 minutes on the clock, essentially, recapping the second and final day of mandatory mini camp. A lot of fun. Titans now breaking for the summer. Go ahead.
I wanted to ask the audience something. First of all, let me get to higher up beats. Is this your Twitter username? Because I'll find you if it is and follow you and open the DMs so that they're not closed anymore so we can talk about these drops and everything else. So let me know if that's your Twitter username or not. Secondly, I wanted to ask the audience something to leave a comment about. And this question is something that I'll be talking about tomorrow on Heed the Call. We are doing our next two episodes of Heed the Call, Justin, are the best player in every team's history. This century. So this century, who is the best player on every team? I've been assigned the AFC South for tomorrow's episode, which is great because I get to do the Titans. And my question to you guys is, who is the best player since the year 2000 in Titans history? Is it Steve McNair because he was a co-MVP? He was the heart and soul of the most successful Titans team that's ever existed. Went to a Super Bowl, took them to a Super Bowl
Derrick Henry.
Or is it Derrick Henry, who had, obviously, he led the league in rushing, 2019, 2020, 2,000-yard season, offensive player of the year, first-team All-Pro, who is continuing to be really good for Baltimore, which kind of sucks. But I think Henry had the counting stats, McNair, sort of the intangibles and the heart and soul factor, the grit. I just want you guys to comment below, or somebody else, like, Albert Haynesworth might be the most talented player in Tennessee Titans history. I don't think he counts as the best player because he was only here for 4 years and then he went and signed a big old contract and then sucked for the rest of his life. So just let me know who you think the best player in Titans franchise history is, because I'm going to probably go with Steve McNair, partly out of nostalgia, partly out of like they actually went to the Super Bowl with him. But Derrick Henry put the team on his back the year they went to the AFC Championship. That was all him throughout those playoffs. So let me know if you think it's Derrick Henry. Curious to know what you guys think. All right, that will do it for this episode. We appreciate you all. We'll be back tomorrow with another topic. And we're going to start sort of reviewing the offseason. Friday's live show is going to be like a full offseason review. So be back here for that on this channel. 10:30 a.m. Central will be live on Friday. I will be podcasting from another location. So hopefully everything goes smoothly. But until then, remember to like this video. Comment on the video, the actual video, after the live stream ends in about 12 seconds. Subscribe to the channel, turn on alerts. We'll see you guys tomorrow. Until then, oh, Justin, I'm sorry to do this to you. No comment from Jay Memphis.
We keeping a book right now.
You guys do a great job. Now, can you hit the thing before we go, please? And we also got a request to play out with the Carnell Tate song, which I absolutely can do that. So maybe we'll do that instead of the typical quick ending here. Justin, you got to go. I understand. You don't have to sit here for the whole song again, but here we go. 2 minute Carnell Tate song.
Appreciate you, JM Memphis. Thank you so much for the super chat. Very, very generous. Thank you so, so much for that.
Yes, we really, really appreciate all the support you guys show for this channel and especially that super chat. All right, that's it. Until next time, y'all stay safe out there and tighten up.
With the fourth pick, the Tennessee Titans select Carnell Tate, wide receiver, Ohio State.
How about that for the first surprise of the night?
Wow. I'm a reliable target for him. Whenever you need me, I'm there for him. I'm always open.
Oh, yeah, he's true. Yeah. He's true.
Carnell Tate.
I'm always open.
Carnell Tate.
Yeah, he's true.
Carnell Tate.
Yeah, he's true.
Carnell Tate.
I'm always open.
He's a receiver that can win at all three levels of the defense. Him stretch the field, but then you have this catch radius and the size and big hands where you see him show up in the red zone.
Carnell Tate.
I'm always open.
Carnell Tate.
I'm always open.
Carnell Tate.
I'm always open.
Carnell Tate.
Yeah, he's true.
It's great hands. Wins in man coverage. He's a strider, man. He really doesn't drop nothing, so just got to continue to find ways to get him involved early, get him the ball. He'll have an explosive year just because he'll get a lot of one-on-one matchups, and that's what we want. We want guys to come down and play man because we think we can beat him.
Carnell Tate.
I'm always open.
Carnell Tate.
Yeah, he's true.
Carnell Tate.
Yeah, he's true.
Carnell Tate.
I'm always open.
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 Carnell Tate.
Yeah, he's true.
Prove my worth and then just prove to the coaches they can trust me. Just getting up to the level of the older guys, the veterans, just prove I'm trustworthy to them as well.
Carnell Tate.
I'm always open.
Carnell Tate.
Yeah, he's true.
Carnell Tate.
Yeah, he's true.
Carnell Tate.
I'm always open.
Carnell Tate.
I'm always open.
Carnell Tate.
I'm always open.
Carnell Tate.
I'm always open.